Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi there, and welcome back to the Explaining History podcast. Thanks once again for tuning in. We're going to talk today about the Reich Concordat of 1933, the agreement soon to be broken between Hitler and the Roman Catholic Church. I'm going to look a little bit about the deeper origins of the Concordat and the chaos, really, in Hitler's government that leads to its rupture. And I think we can draw some really interesting stuff from that. Before we get started, just a few quick announcements. You can now find me on the Huffington Post. Look for me, Nick Shapley, on the Huffington Post, talking about history, teaching, psychology, and a bunch of other stuff. And as mentioned on the previous podcast, we're still hoping to raise some badly needed finances for the podcast hosting. So if any kind souls out there can spare a donation, if everyone spared a penny, literally a penny, every subscriber spared a penny, we wouldn't have to ask for any help for the next 5 years. So if anyone can give us any assistance, drop us a line at nick_shepley@hotmail.com, and hopefully we can keep this podcast going free of any corporate interferences. Okay, let's move swiftly on from that. So in 1933, as part of the process of the consolidation of Hitler's power, which begins in January 1933 with Hitler's appointment as Reich Chancellor, and takes a dramatic step forward at the end of February with the suspicious Reichstag fire and the following anti-communist legislation and emergency powers and the mass arrests of communists, socialists, trade unionists and fellow travellers. Hitler looks at the Catholic Church with some degree of trepidation. Why? Well, he had an admiration and a fear of Catholicism, perhaps overstated in terms of its ideological power and the ability of the Roman Catholic Church to indoctrinate, in his view, its adherents, its followers. Hitler, no stranger to hyperbole, certainly overstated the extent to which Catholicism had the power to indoctrinate. He was obviously looking at Catholicism through the filter of his own ideological prejudices and experiences. However, Catholicism was certainly a kind of a militantly political force in 19th and early 20th century Europe, and perhaps for the most of the 20th century was. You only need to look at the politics of the Catholic Church regarding communism in Poland to see that that is the case. Maybe it's only now in the 21st century that its political power is somewhat on the wane. And this made Hitler extremely uncomfortable, the idea that there were forces in Germany that were not loyal to him or to an idea of Germanness, and were instead loyal to Rome, to the Nazis, was tantamount to a direct challenge. And also the ideologies put forward by Catholicism or Christianity in general of mercy, of tolerance, of turning the other cheek, of compassion, were directly at odds with Hitler's racial ideologies, the idea of racial struggle, survival of the fittest, that mercy was a weakness that any race could ill afford, and contrary to the laws of nature as Hitler saw them. So there were real fundamental differences there. And to give you a wider context, this was not the first time that Catholicism had been viewed with fear and suspicion in Germany. Fairly soon after the creation of a unified German nation state, the German Empire, in 1871, the Chancellor Otto von Bismarck launched the Kulturkampf, the his anti-Catholic policies, which marginalised a third of the population. Just for the benefit of background, since the Reformation, you'd been looking at within the Holy Roman Empire, which then becomes Germany after 1871. You're looking at something like about a two-thirds split. Two-thirds of the population were Protestant, a third Catholic, or roughly that kind of division. So Catholicism was seen, had been traditionally seen, firstly by Bismarck and then later by Hitler, though there were also undercurrents of this within the Weimar Republic as well, as the enemy within. Why? Well, not only was there the connection with Rome, but also Germany, after 1918, is sandwiched by two aggrieved Catholic powers. To the east is Poland, and to the west is France. The German Empire had incorporated within it Catholic minorities in East Prussia, large numbers of Poles who were still there after the end of World War One, and up till 1918, between 1871 and 1918, in the West, French or Franco-Germans in Alsace and Lorraine, which had again a large number of Catholics. So there was this sense that there was a kind of a threat to the nation's in national integrity, and that Catholicism was synonymous with ethnic minorities. So there was fertile ground for anti-Catholicism. But Hitler didn't want initially to take the Catholic Church on, far from it. The militant secularism within Nazism, which viewed really the only ideological hegemonic worldview as that as being a racial one, meant that sooner or later something would be done about Christianity in Germany. But Hitler had two differing objectives. Firstly, with the Catholic Church, Hitler saw the Catholic Church as being unified and obviously led from Rome, and that was the first main challenge. The Protestant churches, obviously since the Reformation, the whole point of Protestantism is it's not unified, it's not led by an equivalent pope. The Reformation was a rebellion against the ideas of popes in general. And so you had smatterings of small Lutheran and Calvinist churches across Germany. They sometimes existed on their own, sometimes in other small federations and groupings. Hitler wanted to incorporate all the Protestant churches together into one national Reich Church that could then be Nazified, that the ideas of the Gospels could be gradually eroded, as happens, an Arian chapter is introduced into the Bible. Now, this has major ructions which within the Protestant Church, and I don't want to go into them now because I want the focus of this podcast to be on Catholicism, but we will return to this in the future. The plan of action with Catholicism was to first appease it, pacify it, neutralise it, and then eventually, probably after Hitler's war, had that war been successful, to abolish it altogether or to ban it from Germany. And something similar would have happened with the Protestant churches, some kind of Nazified gospels would have been introduced, and then gradually in Hitler's view, though I doubt this would have been possible, Christianity would have been swept away and a new sort of state cult of some description would have replaced it, where official public morality would simply have been racial ideas. But that was, a lot of it, as with so many things with Nazis, was wishful thinking. I mean, you only need to look at Hitler's plans for the new city of Germania to realise how pie in the sky much of the kind of projections into the future Hitler had. So let's talk about the Concordat itself then, what happened. Well, it wasn't an entirely unattractive offer that Hitler put to the Catholic Church. There were things that the Catholic Church wanted from an agreement with the Nazis. Principally, the Catholic Church looked to Hitler as an anti-communist strongman. The fear that the Catholic Church had was that the Soviet Union would sweep across Europe, and with it, not only would the Catholic Church be deprived of all its property and wealth, but a kind of a godless atheism would spread too. When you have particularly a large Catholic Poland, very nervous about the Soviet Union, on the borders, on Russia's borders, feeling rather anxious during the 1930s. The irony, of course, being that the threat to Poland from Germany is equal, if not even greater. The Nazis, fully aware of how loyal Catholic voters were to the Centre Party, they were one of the main demographics that they could not seem to sway in favour of Nazism between 1929 and 1932. The Catholic voters voted in huge numbers for the Centre Party, obviously often directed by Catholic priests and bishops during Mass. The Centre Party itself had already dissolved prior to the Concordat at the start of 1933, and it was the lay organisations that the Catholic Church was really seeking to protect. So these were Catholic trade unions, Catholic youth groups, Catholic social clubs and schools. It was these, the kind of the real infrastructure of Catholic life in Germany that was under threat. The totalitarian nature of Nazism meant that all institutions should eventually be Nazified, and the idea that there would be rival youth groups to institutions like the Hitler Youth eventually cause irreconcilable differences for the Concordat. So the offer of protection for lay organisations was meant to be met in return.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
By a promise by the Catholic community in Germany to abstain from all political action. Within weeks of the signing of the Concordat, the regime begins to seize property owned by lay institutions of the Catholic Church anyway, closing them down. And the question here really is, why does this happen? Hitler's gone to the time and the trouble to make this agreement with the Catholic Church, and then seems to be breaking it right away. We're not suggesting that Hitler is a man of principle here or above breaking agreements. That's certainly not the case. Everything we know about Hitler shows that his promises are really only ever kept when it suits him. But the question is, really, why does it suit Hitler to undo the agreement he's made so soon? And I think the answer lies in an understanding of Hitler's government. If you look at who is driving these attacks on the Catholic Church, it is Himmler and Reinhard Heydrich, who are anti-Catholic ideologues. Hitler is fixated on the perceived threat to Germany of the Jews. He doesn't particularly care for the Catholic Church, and as previously mentioned, he's slightly in awe of its power. But he doesn't seem to have had the rabid anti-Catholicism that people like Himmler and Heydrich have. In addition to that, on a lower tier, and we'll look at these guys in a moment, there are Nazi figures such as the Hitler Youth leader Balder von Schirach and I use this term in inverted commas, Nazi intellectual Alfred Rosenberg, who do various things to antagonise the Catholic Church. And the picture that emerges here seems to be one of chaos. Now, this fits in with what we already know about the Nazi regime, that you have a leader who is not particularly interested in the day-to-day administration of government, who has different lieutenants who are competing for power and influence, who are looking to push certain policy agendas ahead, even when they're contradictory to the overall thrust of government. So often Hitler isn't, steering the ship of state and making sure that policy is coherent. He is allowing policy to emerge and develop in what he views as a natural and organic way, but in what appears to be quite a kind of a confusing and inexplicable and chaotic manner. One interesting detail is this, that on the 20th of July, newspapers were forbidden to call themselves Catholics, so there would have been all sorts of Catholic newspapers, local, regional and national across Germany, but they are banned from calling themselves that and have to be called German. Well, the new Reich press laws would have stipulated this, and this suggests again that policies that are being introduced don't have clauses and provisions within them to prevent them from contradicting one another. And so you get internecine struggles between different government departments emerging, and a chaos and a confusion as to what the official policy is. Does the Concordat mean that Catholic papers can do as they like, or does do the Reich Press laws mean that all newspapers have to be German and patriotic? Which policy comes forth? And it's normally Hitler's role to adjudicate in these matters. Hitler sometimes does, but very often doesn't. And so a kind of a law of the jungle emerges. At this time, up until the end of 1933 at least, the Catholic Church plays a safe political game and doesn't criticise the regime, even though non-Aryan Catholics are being at least harassed, if not persecuted. And obviously the question of the Jews is completely ignored by the Catholic Church. Cardinal Pacelli, who had been the papal nuncio to Germany and was now the Secretary of State under Pope Pius XI, makes some indication to the German Foreign Ministry that the Church might make a protest, but nothing really occurs. It's not that leading Nazis were blind to the power of the Catholic Church, certainly not. Himmler has a varying kind of policy of at some points being cautious and making sure that no anti-Catholic measures happen without his say-so. He didn't want a kind of anti-Catholic free-for-all. And then at certain times, putting churches under surveillance, ensuring that Catholic organisations had to apply for licences from him personally, and these sorts of measures. The real crisis comes in 1934 over the issue of youth groups. Balder von Schirach, who is on the fringes of Hitler's circle, a real kind of also-ran within Nazism, and a man of considerably limited talent. Schirach decided that he would, apparently independently of the rest of the regime, attack Catholic youth groups and encourage the Hitler Youth to go picking fights with them. He said it was terrible that Catholic youth groups, kind of Catholic Boy Scouts, existed independently of the Hitler Youth. And often Catholic boys were intimidated into joining the Hitler Youth. There doesn't seem to be any central direction from Hitler in this. It looks as if it is initiative taken by a government minister himself. But again, that tells you something quite fundamental about how Hitler's government was operating. Hitler was continuing to negotiate about the future of lay organisations at the same time that men like Schirach were attacking Nazi youth groups. So one reading of that might be, well, actually Hitler is involved in this, and Hitler is actually directing these things. We'll probably never know, because most of what Hitler did was informal and verbal, not written down and not signed. And this was a great way of putting pressure on the Catholic Church to do what Hitler wanted, which again is perhaps unclear. There were a couple of assassinations of Catholic leaders during the Night of the Long Knives. Mainly the SA were assassinated, but a few conservative nationalists were bumped off, and some Catholic youth leaders were murdered. Heinrich Brüning, former Chancellor of Germany and Centre Party politician, was apparently on the hit list too, but he was out of the country at the time, so we may never know. The final confrontation that really kind of tears the Concordat apart is the intervention of Alfred Rosenberg. And Rosenberg, in his rather hateful book, The Myth of the 20th Century, attacked not only obviously the Jews, but Catholicism, claiming that it was some sort of terrible Jewish lie. He wrote various other things about this. This is rounded upon not only by the Catholic Church, but also by the German Christians, who are a fairly Nazified Protestant sect. This is not official Nazi Party doctrine. Rosenberg is a leading Nazi, but his writings are considered to be his own. It's not officially endorsed, but it's a big sign to the Catholic Church that this is what Nazis really think. By 1935, priests are active in the churches and cathedrals of Germany, denouncing Nazi doctrine, really as a result of Rosenberg, which again suggests that Hitler didn't really have a control over the messages that were coming out of his government. It seems to be unnecessary hassle introduced by Rosenberg, who was, again, sort of on the fringes of Hitler's circle. And as Rosenberg repeats his criticisms of the Catholic Church, you get more and more Catholics coming out onto the street for Catholic events, Catholic May Day events and rituals. And as Catholic priests write in anger to Hitler and speak from the pulpit, leading Nazis say, well, look, they've broken their side of the agreement. The Concordat is off. Now we can introduce the state repression that we'd always wanted to. And from then on, there is, by 1936-37, there's an upsurge in state repression of the Catholic Church, with churches being shut down and priests being falling under surveillance, sometimes even being arrested for periods of time. And the final nail in the coffin of the Concordat comes in 1937, when the Pope sends to Germany a papal encyclical, a statement from the Pope condemning Nazism. The papal encyclical called With Burning Concern, or in German, Mit Brenner die Sorge, is printed and at 12 different hidden printing presses and smuggled across Germany by altar boys, read out simultaneously on the same day by priests at Mass, and it has a powerful effect on Germany's Catholic congregations, and it drives the regime wild. Gestapo men who are infiltrating Catholic congregations report back this outrage, and the regime again increases its repression and surveillance of the Catholic Church, between then and 1945, the fate of many Catholic bishops is a particularly bleak one, though perhaps a story for another time. So as we can see, much of the Concordat seems to have been kind of a waste of time, really. The repressive policies that certain regime members were hoping to introduce anyway, become a sort of a de facto reality, based on the provocations of Nazi ministers and the response by the Catholic Church, which is to be expected. And I think if you're answering a question on this, that the reality of the Concordat is it actually shines a light on the nature, the chaotic nature, and the inconsistent and incoherent nature of Hitler's government. Anyway, I hope you found that handy and useful, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.